Hey everyone, welcome back to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
The beardless.
Yes.
The beardless, the much more Tom Paris-y.
Look at that.
Yeah, I had to shave this week.
It looks good, actually. I haven't seen you without a beard in probably 10, 15 years, it seems.
Yeah, I think it's been about 12 years. Shaved once. I shaved once, like in 2015. Yeah. I had a really thick beard. I had a long one. I directed this pilot, and I remember I didn't shave the whole time after I got the job because I was like, it's good luck. This is my good luck beard. So I had a nice long hipster beard and I shaved it all off to nothing. And then I was like, what did I do?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores led by Walmart and Target are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Well, so, what's the reason why you shaved this time?
So the reason I had to shave this time is the show that I'm finishing up producing and directing is called Resident Alien. It's with Alan Tudyk. Mm-hmm. And we have to fly in helicopters up to a glacier on Tuesday and go film for a day on Wednesday, all day at the glacier.
Nice.
Because of COVID, the company, parent corporation, which is Comcast,
yep,
was like, you guys can't fly in helicopters. It's too confined to space. And so we were like, well, we have to fly in a helicopter because we've got to shoot. Like, this is part of the story.
Right.
There's stuff we owe for the episodes that we have to be on in the snow. Yeah. And the only place to get snow right now is up on a glacier. So, so at one point they said, no, we were going to cancel it. We were going to try to do it all visual effects. That was getting complicated. And then I said to them, I said, well, wait a minute. I said, how do nurses go to work every day? Like, what do nurses in the COVID wing do when they've got to go to work? Like, they can't stop working. And, you know, I said, well, put on those suits, those hazmat suits. And then Comcast was like, well, you're right. Like, maybe. So we settled on these respirators that we're going to wear that are super strong. And we have to wear goggles. But now we can get 5 people in the helicopter at once. Yep. So we can take the crew of 30 people that are filming that day up there. But we had to get fitted this week for our respirator.
Yeah.
So I had to shave on Wednesday and then we film next Wednesday. So until we shoot, I got to keep my face clean shaven.
Yeah, because you need a secure seal between that mask. And if you have facial hair, it's going to actually compromise the safety of that unit.
Exactly.
That device
you're using, exactly. Right? Yeah. So everybody, I saw some of the guys on the crew are Dolly Grip. Chris is his name. I've known him for a long time. He's always had a beard. I've never seen it. I was like, I didn't recognize him. Or one of our ADs, Gurjeet is his name. Gurjeet, I've known for 5 or 6 years. Never seen him without a beard. I was like, who are you? So yeah, there's a lot of people on the crew that are like, oh my God, that's what you look like. I'm sure they're doing the same with me.
I am. I'm actually staring at your chin and your upper lip. Everything is just new to me. Even though, of course, I knew you as clean shaven on the show. You were a clean shaven younger man then.
You know, what's funny is I said to somebody after I shaved this week, that somebody said, oh my God, you look like Tom Paris now. Like I never noticed it. Like, I couldn't imagine because I've only known you with a beard. It never made sense. Yeah. But now they're like, I see the Tom Paris. And I said, it's funny because when I go to conventions and people see me with a beard, they're like, wait, who are you? Like, you don't look like Tom Paris. I'm like, yeah, but it is.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
Very good. I just watched my panel that I moderated for New York Comic Con. I moderated Smallville's 20th anniversary.
I know panel. That was a big panel.
It was a big panel, but I'm very self-critical of my moderation. And there's a few things that I did that I wish I could have did again. The beginning was awkward because I got a little bit tongue-tied Because usually if I'm moderating a panel in front of a live audience, I'll say, all right, put your hands together, give a warm round of applause to, and I started saying, give a warm round of applause. And I realized, oh my God, there's nobody here to really, you know what I'm saying? Who at home is going to be like, woo? I mean, maybe a couple of diehard fans, right? But I kind of, I verklempt myself by saying that. Mm. And then in my mind going, I shouldn't be saying that. And then I just, so the beginning is a little shaky, I'll admit, but then it picks up, it gets better. And then, Michael Rosenbaum told a story about how his grandmother had told him, she had told his grandmother that he was auditioning for Smallville, and mm-hmm. she had told him for the very first time, you're going to get it. And she never says that.
Wow.
And then she died like a week later and he ended up getting it.
You know?
And it was like this sort of morbid story. And at the end, I was like, thank you for sharing. And I said, awesome. But then Megan was sitting next to me going, are you saying awesome about his grandmother dying? I go, oh, no, I didn't mean that. I meant awesome, meaning awesome that you shared that. So
yeah.
That was my other little mess up. But
well, if you'd like, Garrett, we could ask everybody right now for our podcast to give us a warm round of applause for Garrett and Robbie.
Woo! There you go. That's good.
I hear it.
Can you hear it?
I can hear it a little bit.
I can hear it in the, I can feel the applause.
I can feel it. Exactly.
All right. So let's go ahead and play a little game of what do we remember for our patrons and for everybody else. Stay tuned. Robbie and I are going to go watch this episode, come back and give you our 2 cents worth. Thanks a lot.
See you soon.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen, from reviewing Cold Fire.
Yes. Well, we didn't review it yet. We're not back from reviewing. We're back from
rewatching.
And now we are about to review.
Correct.
I had fun watching that episode.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Before we jump into the review of this episode, let me just say that I did call Mr. Robert Beltran.
Yes.
Because we had questions. At least I had questions.
Yes.
From last episode that we reviewed Tattoo.
Right.
First was number one, did the hawk fly away? We do know that a lot of the interiors were shot on stage. I mean, well, a lot of the exteriors were shot on stage 16 to make to make it look like exterior. But they did go to Vasquez Rocks, he said, to film that opening bit. And I asked about if he recalled about, you know, the hawk actually flying away. And he doesn't remember that one.
I don't remember that either.
Yeah. But he does remember that is not his backside. I was right. When we see.
Really?
Yes. I was right because the hair looked like a wig. And when you saw it from behind, it didn't look like his hair. And I asked him, is that you naked from behind? He's like, no, because I refused to do it. A body double.
Oh.
A body double.
Wow. I didn't remember that.
So he literally, he said, listen guys, I'm not going to shoot this. I refuse to show my backside. And you're going to have to find a body double. And that's why they did. And if you see the shot, it's from far away. It's not really a close up, you know?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So that was somebody else's,
digital butt crack.
Yeah, is somebody else wearing a flesh-colored tights at the bottom, and that they replaced the butt crack later. That's not Robert Beltran's butt.
That's funny.
So now we have that.
Funny how like each of these episodes, you know, it's obvious, but I guess I'll just say it is like, you know, in Tattoo that was a Beltran episode, mm-hmm. so he's going to remember a lot more about that than we do. It's like this episode was a Kes episode and I didn't have that much to do in it. So I didn't really remember very much of it.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed this episode, by the way. I really, really did. I had a lot.
Good. want to hear my limerick?
I got a limerick too.
Yes. I'll let you go. Shoot your limerick, synopsis limerick.
My synopsis limerick goes something like this. Kes and Tuvok practice some brain work, then run into a second caretaker jerk. Her Okompan sidekick fills Kes with some mind tricks, but Voyager survives with some teamwork.
Nice.
That's my limerick.
Oh, man. You went all out on that one. You went all out. Okay. Here we go.
Okay.
My synopsis limerick for Coldfire. There once was an Okompan named Kes, who left her home planet, no less. A distant cousin appears, helps her surpass her fears, but left her in such a complete mess.
Ah, nice. Nice.
I'm glad we went totally different directions in that too. So that's good.
It's funny with the limerick because, you know,
it is.
The rhyme is going to drive where you go, like from the, you know.
Exactly. You have to get the rhyme down.
I just wanted to start with Kes and Tuvok practice some brain work.
Sure.
That was, you know.
That was a good start.
Brain work. Sure. Brain work started it all off and then you just stuck with that.
It really, really did. The story is by Anthony Williams. The teleplay is by Brandon Braga and directed by Mr. Cliff Fole.
Yes. I loved Cliff.
Yeah. Cliff was great.
Yeah.
He has, I think he directed 20 some odd episodes of TNG. He directed dozens of, or a dozen maybe, I think, of DS9, 10 episodes of Voyager. But, you know, he directed as early as $6 Million Man. You remember that series that when we were kids, we were watching that as kids. And
no, Cliff was a real old school veteran television director. From the old school, I remember I shadowed Cliff. I really liked Cliff a lot. I shadowed him to learn about directing.
Right.
And he had mentioned to me one time that he was going over to do an X-Files episode at Fox, on the Fox lot. And I said, wow, I'd love to come shadow. You know, shadowing on Star Trek is great, but I'd love to learn about other shows as well. And if would that be okay if I came and shadowed you?
Yeah.
And he said, sure, let me check with the people there. And he did and put me in touch with them. So I got approved to come shadow and shadowed over at X-Files a little bit.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Cliff Bowl was, because he was so well connected and it had been around a lot. He was a really important person for me in learning to direct. And I thought he was great. He had a very old school kind of personality, you know, the old director of like, I'm the boss, do what I say. You know, it was a little bit of that, but I appreciated that. Like, I always felt we were in good hands with Cliff. We, you know, we didn't work as long.
Yeah.
Our hours weren't as long. I just felt like he knew what he wanted. He knew how to get it and how to finish a day. So, yeah.
But Cliff, what set him apart, or at least what I recall of Cliff, was that he had a very specific style of how he dressed. Like, he would show up on set with like a bolo tie, denim shirt, like a
jean shirt, he's a definitely bit of a cowboy.
So I look at Cliff and I thought, okay, this guy lives in Colorado, he's like a rancher, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like, he looked like that's what his MO would be if you saw him but didn't hear him speak, didn't know what he did. You'd think that guy owns a ranch in Colorado, period, end of story. He was definitely old school Hollywood, been around forever, passed away in 2014. So he's no longer with us, but definitely someone that I look forward to when he did direct. I just knew, okay, this guy's going to be cool.
There we go.
There's a picture of him right there. Yeah.
There's Cliff.
Right in the middle. Tuvok is standing there. And there's Robbie. Young Robbie from an episode where they got to go back to planet Earth.
Yeah.
And Robbie gets to go to the Griffith Park Observatory and hang out with Sarah. I'm blanking. What's the comedian's name that you worked with?
Sarah Silverman.
Silverman.
Yeah.
Exactly. See, this is the thing, Robbie. The older I get, the names just start just escaping my brain.
Yeah,
they just, I know, just
me
not
too.
There.
Me too.
My mind is not as solid. There you go. There's Cliff again. Yeah.
Yeah, there's Cliff.
He's directing
DS9.
TNG.
Yeah.
Or DS9. Yeah, it could be DS9, right? So, Cliff Bowl. Definitely somebody who once again, was someone I look forward to. If I saw him on the first day of filming, I go, oh, it's Cliff. Cool.
Yeah. You know,
just really easy to get along with guy, right?
Agreed.
No airs. He never put on airs, which is really good.
Yeah.
Cool. So in this episode, oh, and the other thing about Cliff, he directed the TNG episode Conspiracy, which is where we see the appearance of the aliens known as the Bolians. And Bolians were named after Cliff Bowl,
because of his last
name.
Right.
Which is I don't think there's any other director that got, you know, there are no McNeil aliens running around, right? So
no.
But Bolians, yeah, that's are right. real.
So. I forgot that. I heard that. I remember hearing that, that they had named the Bolians after him.
Such a cool piece of trivia, though. Yeah. Right? I mean, to be a director of a sci-fi show, and then the producers go, guess what? We're going to name these aliens after you.
It's so like, funny. Huh? Yeah. That's so funny.
Right. I would have thought that an alien would be named after an executive producer writer first. Before, like, they would be the Bragians, yes, yeah. or the yes, Bermanonians, yes,
Bermanonians, Bermaxians,
the Bermaxians, yes. But yeah, but Cliff gets his own alien species, which is pretty damn cool.
The Bolian, yeah.
So the very first scene is Tuvok training Kes in mind kung fu, right?
Yes, but before that, even before that, there was a recap. Did you see
the recap? Yes, the recap.
The recap. So I don't ever remember a recap on our show. And in fact, I think it was Majel's voice.
It was her voice.
It was Majel's voice
doing
this recap about the caretaker, and which I thought was really interesting because we never had a recap on our show.
Yeah, but it's even more interesting because recaps, and typically when you're watching any type of episodic series, the recaps happen in the season opener of like season two, episode one. You know, they recap what happened in season one going into season two. We are already into the thick of season two and they throw this recap in.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think they really wanted to land the idea that the caretaker, they even had a clip of that quote that you mentioned about there's another, you know, my partner. My mate.
Yeah, she does say mate. I was wrong. Yeah. I thought it was just a friend, you know, or a coworker, but it's a mate.
So. Yeah, my mate is out there.
My mate.
Anyway, so that the recap I found really interesting because that's unusual for us.
Yeah,
unusual
definitely.
For all Star Trek shows. I don't really remember seeing it on any of.
No. It's a very rare. It's a unicorn. Yeah, you know, to have a recap on Star Trek. So then in this scene where they're, you know, Tuvok is training Kes, then she focuses in and all of a sudden she can hear Neelix. And then he tells her to just block out all the voices. And then we start hearing about Neelix getting a haircut, which is another thing which we never see anyone getting a haircut.
No.
Right? And we don't even, and then we learn about Neelix is very particular about how long his ear hairs need to be. And we're thinking like,
I wonder, you know, because I don't know that they wrote the dialogue for Neelix. They probably just said in the script and she hears Neelix's voice.
Yeah.
And they probably had Ethan Phillips go to the ADR stage and said, oh, just talk about a haircut or something. And I bet you the ear hairs, my guess is that was his improv, that they just said, oh, just, you know, talk like you're getting a haircut and telling him. And he started adding the ear hair. That sounds like an Ethan Phillips.
That sounds about right. Definitely. Yeah. But it was very peculiar because I don't remember hearing, I don't remember at all anything about ear hairs. And then watching that, I started laughing. I
thought that was cute. And then she laughed. She laughed.
She did. She giggled.
Yeah. I have to say, I really am enjoying watching these episodes because I had forgotten how important Kes was these first couple of seasons. She really had a ton. She had a lot more to do than I did on the show, than Tom Paris did, honestly. Like, she did. I mean, and her stories weren't just interesting character stories. Yeah. They were tied into
the overall
ship's, the arc of the first couple of seasons. She was really, and tied into the development of the Doctor character, and tied into all kinds of things. I mean, we really could not have become the show we did without that character and without Jennifer Lean's contribution. She was great.
Yeah, she was an integral part of the crew.
Yeah.
The first bridge scene that we see, there is a point where Janeway glances back at Chakotay, who then flashes a very boyish and
smile.
It was
smiling at her a lot in this episode.
Yes.
And it's not really explained. Like, why?
It's almost like they had Nookie. To me, it's like you know what I'm saying? It's like, like that.
Well, it's funny because there's a couple times in this episode where I thought the actors were sort of smiling about things that weren't really a part of the scene. Like when, when Gary, when he said, well, would you guess that I am 14 years old? And he said, he looks like he's about to laugh. And then she looks like she's about to laugh. And she goes, well, I'm two or something. She's like, no, that's not possible. The oldest living Ocampan only lives till nine. And it felt like in that conversation that it was two actors sort of laughing at how silly it
was. I'm
14 and you're two. It
didn't
seem like the characters. And then the Chakotay smile throughout this episode.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite place it. And then I thought, well, you know, Robert has not had many lines. Like he was in a bunch of scenes where he just sort of sat there. So I wonder if he had said to Kate at one point, like, I am in all these scenes and I never say a word. Just look at me, you know, just watch how I, you know, I have nothing to contribute. And so I felt like his smile was almost like whenever Kate looked at him, he's like, see, I still haven't said anything.
I still haven't said a word.
Felt like that's what that smile was about because he did it a lot.
He did. I just found it interesting because typically Chakotay is he's a very straight-laced kind of businessy kind of dude.
Character. Yeah, he's very kind of dry and hard to read.
Yes, and then for him to have that very... and it was a very endearing smile. It was warm and it was boyish is the way I described it. So
agreed.
Voyager is known as the ship of death. You remember that scene?
In the
briefing room.
I got to go back though. When the remains of the caretaker, the rock, starts making that noise. I was like, oh my god, that is the most irritating sound I've ever heard in my life. Make it
the
stop.
Pitch squeak.
That like kind of. Yeah, it was like nails on a chalkboard.
The rock made.
And it happened a few times. And I was really glad that Tuvok said, I'm going to make a toxin for this thing. If it keeps making this noise, I'm going to kill it. Because I was ready to kill it the first time it made that noise. and by the way, Tuvok's quarters, where he's teaching Kes, that's Janeway's quarters, redressed. It's the same size.
Maybe
because he's a senior officer, he gets the larger quarters. I know you and I and... Balana, I can't remember who else, but we had smaller quarters over by sickbay. But Tuvok's quarters had nice windows, and he was in the same spot where they would put Janeway's quarters.
Yeah, well, we also made mention of when we saw Kes's quarters, not in this episode, but in a prior episode, how they looked larger. Almost like they were, like it was meant double. For a senior officer, then that person... Uh-huh. Died or something happened to them, and so then Kes got that, you know,
maybe
quarters. Yeah.
Did she share quarters with Neelix? I assume, but I don't know.
That's a good question.
I don't know if we ever saw them together. Like, did they sleep in the same bed? They were a couple, so I would.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe that's why they have the bigger quarters, right?
Maybe.
But for some reason, I feel like they weren't in the same quarters. I don't know.
Good question for the people out there.
It is a good question.
So this life form, we call it a sporocystian life form.
Yes.
Caretaker is a sporocystian life form. And so I was like, I looked this up and it's not a real thing, but it does say in the interwebs, a sporocystian life form was dubbed caretaker and it's capable of holographic projection and matter manipulation on a huge scale.
Yeah.
The sporocystian life form was abandoned by his mate when he began a lifelong project of caring out of guilt for the Ocampan people whose planet's surface had been destroyed accidentally by the caretaker's technology. So a sporocystian life form. It sounds super authentic, but it's just totally made up. And,
it's totally made up, yeah.
A holographic projection, capable of holographic projection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And we learned that Suspiria is the name of the caretaker's mate. And Suspiria just sounds like another type of sweetener used for artificial sweetener.
It does.
Stevia, Suspiria.
Yeah, can I have a coffee with 2 packs of Suspiria and some cream? Thanks.
Exactly. And now we know the race of the caretaker aliens is the Nassin is what they were called. The Nassin.
I wrote that down. What
sounds like an Arabic first name, but Nassin. And I had to keep reminding it because was it Nasi or Nassin? Is there an N at the end? I think there's an N in the beginning.
I think it's Nassin or Nassin or I wrote down Nacien is how I spelled it, but I don't know if that's how
Nassin.
It is.
Nassin? Nassin.
Nassin is what I thought they said.
Okay.
Telepathic abilities. They can enhance life and holographic projection, manipulate matter, very much on a small scale, like what the Okampan can do. Obviously tied into the Okampan, getting more telepathic powers and longer lives because they've sold their soul to this caretaker type creature. Kes also says to him at one point, she says, there's over 150 people on board. So again, another number, like we keep throwing out different numbers of how many people are on board. I thought there were over 200 people, but she says to Gary Graham in this episode, over 150 people is the number.
Which would mean less than 200 for sure.
Yeah,
definitely. So. And Gary Graham's character is Tennis is his name, like the sport. Tennis.
Tennis.
Some say tennis, some said Tannis. So it was a little bit of a variation there. He reminded me of Gath, the main hedonistic alien, the Sicarian from Prime Factors that was all trying to lure us in. And so this guy is also kind of trying to lure, one person, Kes, in.
Did you get the sense? It was very creepy.
Very creepy. Yeah,
that Tannis and the way that he was obsessed with Kes, because even when he spoke to the caretaker lady, and she said, you can have the girl, I just want the ship.
Oh yeah,
and you're like, why does he want this particular Okampan so bad? Like, it was a little creepy, and because of he's 14, which is, if they said their average lifespan is up to 9.
That's the oldest, though.
That would be the oldest. That's like a 90-year-old is the oldest.
Right.
He's 140 years old.
Yeah,
he's going after a 20-year-old. Like, she's 2, right? If we did our math.
Correct.
Yeah. He's 140-year-old going after a 20-year-old. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And it felt very romantic and flirty, and all of his interactions were very kind of, I felt bad for Kes. Wanted to protect her and punch him in the face.
And I kept, but I kept thinking, for God's sake, why isn't Neelix getting jealous of Gary Graham's character? I mean, obviously Tennis is making the move And, you know, Neelix just like, doop, doop, I'm just going to watch while you train her. You
well, it's hard when you're an actor. Like, there's Ethan Phillips sitting in the mess hall, and he says at one point, oh, can I interrupt?
Can I talk?
And, yeah. Can I talk? Can I speak for a second? And all he wants to do is say, I am so proud of you for, you know, growing your telepathic ability. That's all yeah. he ultimately wanted to do.
Right.
Gary Graham's character is like, no, we're not done yet. You know?
Yeah.
Very,
very dismissive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very dismissive. It's hard mm-hmm. as an actor to protect your own character mm-hmm. when the writers write things like that, where you're, you know, behaving in a, you know, yeah, a non active way, or, you know,
yeah.
they put Neelix in a corner there. It's tough for Ethan to save him in that situation.
Yeah. In that scene where Kes is trying to show Tuvok her newfound skills that she learned from tennis.
Yeah.
And she ends up burning the cup, and then all of a sudden burning Tuvok. That makeup job, Megan instantly said that Tuvok looks like Michael Jackson in the Thriller video when he
yeah. turned into
and I kept thinking, oh my God, Tim Russ would make an amazing vampire or werewolf, like just with that, with the crazy.
It did
contacts.
Look very yeah. werewolfy and kind
oh,
of.
Oh yeah,
that was a cool makeup. I
that
liked
was a
that.
Good one. I did. Like
I really liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, like when they were walking around in the cargo bay and the flowers and stuff, you know, all I kept thinking of in those scenes is, you know, first it started with small flowers, and then they walk around, and all of a sudden it's a big grown flowers, and then they walk around some more, and it's, and then she does her telepathy, and then she burns the flowers. All I kept thinking was like, oh my God, they have to keep redressing this set with like, oh, that's such a pain in the butt to have to stop and then redress the whole set. And yeah,
but. Because that wasn't CGI. That was actually real plants that they brought in that were more in bloom, right?
Yeah.
When they end up getting
small plants, and then the big plants,
big plants, and then the dead plants. Yeah,
yeah. And every time you change, you know, every time that happens, you got to redress the whole. You got to stop and redress the whole set, so you can't shoot, you can't film the scenes straight through without stopping and redressing everything. And I don't know. That's just, it's hard for me to watch any television anymore. Without thinking about production stuff.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, that was hard to shoot that scene. You know, that would have been.
Yeah. Challenge. It's funny because you can probably look at something and go, oh my God, I know exactly how much time that took, you know, to redress that set.
Yeah. Oh God. That's an hour, 45 minute redress.
That alone, people don't even know what's happening, but it's time. I will say that, this is the one time that I disagreed with a director's way of shooting a particular scene. And it was the scene when Janeway goes down to sick bay to find out what's going on with, you know, B'Elanna and Tuvok and all those guys. And then she realizes that blood drops onto her
uniform. That was in engineering.
It was
in engineering. Yep.
So she looks up, and now they're suspended in air, and they're kind of unconscious. Now, when I read the script, to me, this was a very, I recall now, because of seeing that scene, it reminded me, it cued me, my memory started to come to the forefront.
Yep.
I remembered reading this script thinking, this is a very spooky type of a script. It's kind of a, it was very gothic-y in a way. To me, it was a horror movie.
A bit of a horror movie.
It was a horror movie, exactly. Yeah. And that particular scene, when I watched it, when it aired, and I do remember watching it, that I saw how they were suspended. And I was like, no, why are they like this? Why are they horizontal? They should have been suspended this away, literally where their heads were down and their feet were up. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that would have been more scary than this kind of laid out like they were just floating on a cloud, like they were Superman flying, like in a prone position. It should have been a vertical with the head down, feet up, arms kind of loose, hanging down next to their head, and the blood dripping off of their, you know, out of their nose or whatever, or ears onto Janeway. I don't know if that bothered you or not, or you're okay with how that shot, that scene was shot, but it bugged.
I didn't think about that. That's interesting. I didn't think about changing their position. I did think about how tricky that is to shoot a scene like that. And mm-hmm. I did think about, I was thinking about like the horror movie aspect. And I think that, and I love Cliff as a director. I think he could have done a few more things cinematically that would have felt like a horror movie.
Yes.
You know, there's ways, there's certain tropes that horror movies use, you know, in terms of like suspense beats of walking in and, you know, feeling like, you know, letting things breathe for a while and build up the anticipation and, you know, and then the quick turn or you think you're going to find something and there's nothing there. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's right behind you the other side.
Correct.
Like they could have done things like that.
Yeah.
Because there were some horror movie opportunities that maybe weren't amplified as well as they could have been. I mean, it's funny on our show because that's one thing I loved about Voyager was week to week, we could do tonally very different things. One week we might do a horror movie style show and the next week it might be a romantic, you know, a romance of some sort. And then the next week it might be a action movie. You know, the tones were different week to week. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for us as actors to do and fun for, I think, the directors to try different genres, you know, depending on the story they got.
Yeah.
But sometimes because of that changing tone and genres week to week, we didn't always go, you know, super deep into that style. Like you wouldn't go full horror movie on our show, even though the story might be a little bit horror movie, we still have to make a Star Trek show, you know, week to week.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but I did notice those horror elements. I saw that too.
I just think the reveal would have been so much more effective if they were positioned in that vertical position as opposed to that horizontal, which just was so confusing to me. You know, I don't think it would have been that much more difficult to shoot it the way that I'm talking, you know, compared to what they were doing, right?
Yeah.
They could have figured something out.
Well, I think they got the bodies up there. You know, they put them on wires, probably. They put some holes in the set and rigged some wires up and pulled people up and had them floating. Right. You could have had them in any way you wanted up there.
Yeah. Once you've rigged the wires, you can then place them in any configuration, right? That you want the person in. You don't have to have them, you know, prone like that. And I just feel like, sometimes that'll happen. We being creative people, when we read a script, we'll see it a certain way. And, you know, and again, not to knock Cliff Ball. I think Cliff Ball is a great director. I think that this maybe when he was reading the script, he just saw it only as a horizontal placement of these characters and didn't even think about going vertically, you know? Mm-hmm. And whereas my mind was like, oh God, I would have been much more scared if I saw that vertical, you know, placement of everybody kind of hanging like they were pieces of meat in a meat locker, you know, hanging from the, suspended from the ceiling. That would have scared me more for sure.
I thought, speaking of horror movies, like it reminded me in that scene with Tuvok when he had the makeup on and she was, and Kes started screaming and she was going, screaming really loud.
Yeah.
I always find on filming people screaming is really hard because the sound men are like, you know, trying not to be too close because it can get distorted. Like microphones can get blown out and, you know, you can overmodulate, I guess, the sound too much noise or something. Yeah. And I felt that in that moment of like, it sounded a little bit like she had screamed really loud and blown out the, you know, the mic a little. And I don't know if they cleaned it up and did it ADR, but it just reminds me of like whenever you're acting and you're doing some of those things that require real yelling or screaming, you'll always get these notes from the sound men, like just not, maybe a little less, or if you're the opposite, if you're doing a scene that's, you know, really intimate, you're whispering, you know,
like, yeah,
I'm giving an example.
Are you doing ASMR?
I am doing ASMR.
I thought you were. It looks
No, but when you're doing a really quiet scene, a lot of times the sound men will come over almost always and say, hey, can we have a little more volume? And you're like, dude, I'm supposed to be whispering. Let me just whisper to this person and figure out how to get the sound you want. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
As opposed to me pretending to whisper, but it's really loud. Like, this is a real whisper. You know, it's really quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, that's, yeah.
I like that. Let's just do the show.
That's funny. But the thing is, like, the loud, I thought about this when Kes screamed. all of those extremes, they're always like when you're filming, they're always saying, oh, not so loud on this line because it's too much for the microphones, or a little more on this line because it's too soft what you're saying.
Yes.
And it's really, when I'm directing, I often tell the sound people, like, no, figure it out. You know, like,
yeah,
let the actors play the scene as they really would play it, and let's figure out our side of the street.
So, right. Right.
Okay. So that, yes, the little girl, I found the little girl part to be very confusing. It almost felt like, why did they make her a little girl? I just didn't understand why she took on that form. Was it just a misdirect so that they would think, oh, this is the caretaker and she's not threatening because this is.
Well, do you think, I kind of felt like when we saw the caretaker from the pilot episode, he, yeah, was represented by this very old man on, yeah, the banjo,
yeah,
and he was dying. So I kind of felt like Suspiria, the mate of the caretaker, is not dying, is still full of life. So they represented her in the opposite of old okay, character. They picked the youngest, you know, a female that they could find, a little girl, to represent the youthfulness.
But that's interesting. I didn't think of it. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but that makes sense. That I was just thinking of it like, are they just trying to make a scary girl? Like, it seemed arbitrary, but no, that, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
That she was younger, that Suspiria was younger and represented, right, by this youthful.
Right. And if they are going down the horror kind of genre take, it is, yeah, creepier to have a little girl, as in The Shining.
She was creepy.
You see the two twin girls in the hallway. That's creepy. You know what I'm saying?
Especially when the voice changed, when it went from.
Oh, when it went. Yeah.
Yeah.
Roar, roar, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was creepy. That was pretty
nutty.
Creepy.
That was nutty.
It also was creepy when the little girl changed into the caretaker. I guess the real caretaker is like an alien, is like a worm.
It's like a tentacle. It's like an octopus tentacle or some type of weird.
Is that what it was? I thought it was like a worm.
It could be a worm with like little spikes on it or something, mm-hmm, but it was just, you know, this kind of weird. And I'm sure, you know, if Voyager was filmed today, the CGI would be probably much more impressive than what, yeah, we saw. I mean, that was kind of like, it's like a purple, yeah, you know, Twizzler stick or something like that. It's just, I don't know. Exactly. It's not really that scary. I want to just bring up, this is on a side note. We, last night, Megan was like, I want to watch this show. And it was The Haunting of Bly Manor. So it was,
oh, that's the new Haunting of Hill House, was the first season.
Correct. The same people who did Haunting of, yep, Hill House did Haunting of Bly Manor. And the setup of this whole series is literally Janeway's holodeck program. Like, it's this woman going to England at this huge mansion of some lord to become the governess of these two children. And it's like, wait a minute, The Haunting of Bly Manor, were these writers sitting in base? Yeah, were they Voyager fans, or were they watching the episode of Voyager and they go, hell, funny, this is the setup for our next TV series.
That's like funny. That. So, yeah, I guess for me, first of all, I think smart of Tuvok to develop this toxin for the spore-cysteine life form. Good thinking, smart. He's always on a defensive, you know, kind of mindset to have something in our back pocket just in case we need it, a weapon or a defensive weapon of some kind. So we needed it. And we hit up that little girl with a toxin, and then we put a force field around her. And then Janeway kind of tells her the truth. Look, we didn't kill your dude. You know, we don't want to hurt people. And then Janeway does something that she does a lot in the series. She risks everything and tells Tuvok, take down the force field.
Yeah.
She's this all-powerful, you know, worm that was about to kill all of us, mm-hmm, let it out, and let's just hope that it trusts us now that I've talked, yeah, to it for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's risky. And, if you know, I mean, I know this is all fake. I know this is not a documentary about a real captain. So I get it. But it's like over and over she takes these risks, and you're just like, this could go really bad. Like, what's the downside to letting this thing out? We all die.
That's right. She's very risky. But also, when, yeah, you take that type of risk and that trust and say, just release the force field, bring, yeah, it down. That then, you know, it's a chess game. It's a chess move. And now the alien is like, wait a minute. you're showing me mercy, you know? So yeah. that to me was really, you know, yes, it's risky, but it's also, Janeway's already thought this out. I feel like, you know, she's three or four yeah. steps ahead, and she's like, let's make this move. This is like going all in at the poker table. Like yeah. I'm all in like that. Right. So,
yeah.
So yeah, she's definitely very risky.
Yeah. So that's basically the end of that caretaker story. It turns into a worm and takes off, and then we don't get any help from it, but we survive. And Kes has had to use this power, this darkness that she's discovered.
Yeah.
From Cary Grant's character, she's had to use this to sort of defend herself against Cary Grant's character, and he's got, you know, bleeding from the eyes, and he asks mercy, gets kind of beamed out by the caretaker and saved by her. But Kes has stepped into the dark side a little, and I love that scene with her and Tuvok at the end, which really, I guess, would for me captures the theme of the episode of like,
okay,
you know, the darkness. For me, the theme is what Tuvok stated to her at the end, the lesson, which is we all have a darkness inside of us. And if we don't get in touch with that darkness and accept that part of us as well, we won't know what the light is. How do we know, you know, how can we appreciate the lightness, the light inside of us, if we don't also accept the darkness? And I thought that was really a great point.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Yeah, I think the lines that they said they were talking about, if you don't acknowledge the dark, that'll give it an opportunity to escape. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You have to say that you do have, every person is made of the dark thoughts and the light thoughts. And if you acknowledge that the dark thoughts are there, that's how you keep it in control. If you ignore it or suppress it, that's how it escapes.
Yeah.
That creates crazy people or
crazy
dictators, you know? I didn't really get what he was training her to do in the final scene when all the flowers get burnt. Like, what was he, was he trying to teach her that you can take the energy, the life force of all these plants by feeling them, and in turn they end up dying because you kind of take their life force? Like, what did you get out of that?
I felt like, because she was upset that she killed them, and he goes it doesn't matter whether they live or die, it's whether you're in touch with that power inside of you. So to me, he was all about the power, experience of power, whether it's an experience of power that you give more life to these flowers or an experience of power where you kill them. He was very much drawn to that dark side, very much drawn to the power, the pure power of it all. That's what I got from that.
And then when he's gone, when Tanis is gone, Gary Graham's character is gone, and Kes tries to kind of boil the coffee again, and it doesn't work. So then I start wondering, was that all Tanis doing that to make Kes think she was doing it?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I almost, so there were some questions for me at the end where I was just a little confused about what was the motive of Tanis? Like, what was he trying to do exactly? It was sort of like a, you know, in a Star Wars analogy, come to the dark side, Luke.
Yeah.
It was like that.
Very much.
I could feel that. I still wasn't sure, you know, did Kes really do the burning? Did she really, you know, was she just kind of there as a puppet for Gary's character to?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I agree with the theme, what you came up with on that one. I feel like there's some other theme here that I'm missing, but maybe I'll talk about this on the next episode. That's going to be my thing. Bring up stuff on the next episode for what we just talked about.
Good to have a follow-up.
You got to have a follow-up.
Good to have a follow-up.
Yes.
Totally.
All right, guys. So join us next week when we rewatch, recap the episode Maneuvers. Thanks, Robbie.
Thanks, buddy.